You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I did an interview with the main guy from Too Many Zoos, and they are playing at Splore. They are going to be alongside Chronix and Cody Nielsen and Barry Ashworth from the Dub Pistols and Dizzy Rascal as well. So, you know, it's a big old lineup there with a lot of a lot of different people on that lineup, which is really, really cool. Here it is. This is a interview with Too Many Zoos here on 95BFM. What I saw from you guys, which really, really interested me, is that you started busking around the New York subway system, like when the band started. How's that been incorporated into the album, or has it been incorporated into the album, that experience?
The subway was just a place. It was a cool experience because it was a place that we could go and make music carefree and get paid to do it. So yeah, in that sense, the subway taught us so much and brought us where we are now, and we don't forget that. But when we go to the studio, our focus is to make great music and to have fun doing it. So we're not there thinking about the subway, and we're not thinking about, you know, the festivals that we do or the stages we play. It's more just about, you know, we're in a box and we want to create something awesome and have fun doing it. And that's mainly the priority, and that could be anything, you know. Just like you can't ask a stupid question, there's no bad idea. You know, there's always room for conversation and room for new ideas, and there's no rules in what we do. It's a complete democracy. So yeah, it's just when we go through, we just like having fun and creating music that we want to create. And if that sounds like something that we play in the subway, then that's awesome. And if it doesn't, then that's also awesome. There's limitations to the subway. Those limitations we don't necessarily abide by when we're not there. When we're in the studio, we have all these cool tricks and techniques and different instruments at our fingertips, and we really enjoy using those things.
Were you guys playing in bars and clubs as well around the time, or were you guys just solely, you know, busking on the street?
Before Too Many Zoos even existed, we were all like working in New York just as musicians. So it's funny because people kind of assume that we had never been professional musicians, but we were all professional musicians for years and years before that. So we all played in bars and clubs. We also played at festivals and played on television and, you know, just a bunch of different things. Just being in New York, you get so many great opportunities that come your way and stuff like that. So for us, the decision to busk wasn't even really a decision. It was just something we were doing. I think another assumption that people make about us is like that we had this like fine grand master plan when we went down there, that it was like some sort of like scheme, like a record label would set it up or something, where it's like, oh, you know, like we're going to do this, and then we're going to launch this campaign and promote this, and then 1+1=a viral video, and that's how we're going to get famous. But no, it was just seriously us, like, you know, going, playing. The first time I ever met David, the King of Sludge, was in the subway. And so for us, it was just a paid rehearsal, man. It was a place to go play music and have fun and get paid to do it and have extra bread, you know, and it was easy, and we made our own hours, and no one could tell us what to fucking play. You know, it was just whatever we wanted to do, we could do. And so that's why we did it. It was just, everything else happened in a result of us being down there, but the initial thought of us going there and the initial idea was just for us to have fun.
When you were doing that, you know, sort of in the early days, what was the reception like from people? I mean, were people generally pretty cool, or, I mean, did the police ever bother you much, or, like, you know, were people kind of dicks or about it or anything like that? So was it, yeah, what was it like in that sense?
Well, yeah, I mean, respect demands respect. So in regards to the police and stuff like that, like, you know, like, someone will see like a video online. You know, there was this, like, video of a guitar player that went viral a couple of years ago of him playing in one of the stations in New York and then getting in this huge argument with the cops, and they arrested him, and then, you know, he, like, sued the state for, like, wrongful arrest and lost or whatever and all this shit. And people were just showing me the video or sending it to me and being like, oh, man, like, this probably bugs you because you understand, you know, his frustration or whatever, when in all reality, like, that guy's being an idiot. Because usually when the police ask you to stop playing, they ask you to stop playing for a reason. And most of the time, you don't know that reason because you're not a police officer and you're not protecting the city and you're not dealing with threats and situations and preventing things that haven't even happened yet. So especially in a place like New York, where it's amazing how safe the city of New York is for what it is. And it always wasn't like that. So, yeah, I mean, people asked us to stop, but we were always very respectful when they did and just said okay and understood that they're doing a job just like we're doing a job. The other thing that people assume is that, like, cops are being dicks when they tell you to stop, but it's not like they woke up that day and, like, I'm going to go tell bands to stop playing music. They're like, I'm going to go do a job. And if my boss tells me to tell these people to stop, I'm going to tell them to stop. Nine times out of ten, 999 times out of 1,000, these guys aren't, like, malicious, you know? So, yeah, people did mess with us, but not in any way that they shouldn't have. So, and by the end of it, they really enjoyed us because we respected them, and by showing respect to them, they respected us. And they didn't ask us to stop as much, and they liked us, you know? So that's really what that's about.
If you take your performance on the street compared to, you know, how you're performing in maybe a bar or a venue or somewhere like that, was there anything that you guys had to adapt in, you know, in what songs you played or how you played or anything like that between playing on the street and playing in a venue?
No, I mean, it's just, you know, we do what we do, and the only thing that changes is the box around us. So it's just, you know, you plug microphones in, you learn how to run sound and do things like that. But like I said before, we were all professional musicians before Too Many Zoos and had played on countless stages and done those things. So it was just taking what we did there and applying the knowledge we already had about how to create a stage show and applying it to what we did.
Yeah, I guess one thing I noticed listening to the music is how it sounds a lot like kind of a jam almost, like, you know, and on some of the instrumentals. There's a lot of it recorded or written kind of spontaneously where you guys are just kind of playing together and just something works, or is it really thought out and you're like, yeah, I'm gonna sit down and we're gonna write this instrumental piece?
Every song has its own process and every song, like, is created differently for us, in the sense that, you know, some of our songs we write over the course of years. Like, some of the early songs literally took us years to write those songs, just because we weren't even really writing songs in our head. We were just jamming, and then eventually one day you realize that you kind of just start playing the same thing over and over again because you like those things, and then you have a song. So some of those songs were written over the course of 2-3 years, you know, like, really long time. And then some of the songs I'll write on piano and bring to them, or Leo will write or whatever. And then some of the songs, like today in rehearsal, like, myself and David just sat down and he was playing drums and I was playing piano. And just, you know, like, every song has its own process. Like, some things just come naturally to you, some things are calculated, and some things you find through improvisation. But, yeah, I mean, all the early records were all just improvisation. And, like, on Subway Gods in particular, we had so much more money and time and nice studios to be in at that time. Comparatively, when you go from having an album budget of $500 to absurdly more than that, it just kind of changes your attitude to the way you want to make music, and you have all these possibilities and stuff.
The one thing that I saw that you guys did, which kind of amazed me a little bit, was the fact that you guys backed Beyonce at the Country Music Awards last year. How did that happen? How did that go down? Like, what was, because I mean, obviously, you know, Too Many Zoos, you probably couldn't really class that as a country artist. So, you know, what was the vibe like, just sort of being there and playing in that environment?
Man, it was great. Bea and her whole team are amazing at what they do, and on top of that, they're incredible people and so generous and just, like, they're top of the top in every way, shape, and form. They're kind of the highest order as people and professionals both. So it was a great experience, man. It was, you know, it was like...
Was it like Beyonce's people just got in touch with you guys and said, hey, you guys are really cool, do you want to play backup for her?
Well, like, we've, you know, done work with them before because we played on Bea's record on Lemonade and did a couple tracks for that album. So we had known them through that whole process, and then... Yeah, it just kind of came to be where they were like, hey, we're doing this thing with the Dixie Chicks at the CMAs. We'd love to have you guys join. And so, yeah, it was just kind of a natural progression of building a relationship with someone and, you know, stuff like that. I think people kind of assume, make these assumptions that there's like this crazy, like super overlord, like Illuminati thing, but it's just normal people doing a job really, really well and with a happy heart and a smile on their face. So no, it's nothing but a simple couple phone calls. And I mean, there were some logistical things because we actually ended up like, we had to leave a tour to do some of the stuff, but it was great, man. They're all awesome people and super easy to work with and people that you want to work for because of how nice they are and stuff.
The music, when I heard it, because I mean, I've been to New York before and many times, and it just sounded like that place particularly, you know, it really reminded me a lot of the city. And so I was thinking, because you guys went touring across the state, so when you get to like small rural towns and villages like out in, you know, the middle of nowhere, do people like get it? Do people get the vibe?
Yeah, I mean, people are people, man. You know, it's like whether they live in a village that has 100 people who live there or if they live in New York City, people respond to energy and to music and to stimulation. So people are people are people everywhere in the world. Obviously, there's cultural differences and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, music is a humanistic thing, man.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.